Hello there, and a very warm welcome to another episode of the Get Football Tactics podcast. I'm your host, Neil Shilat, and I'm delighted to say I have been joined by Varun Vasudevan. How are you, Varun?
I mean, I don't think I can properly answer how I am right now. I mean, for viewers, we are recording this as the United Coventry game is going on. And
to extra
simply
time,
could
we
not,
should add?
To extra time, we simply could not find any other time slot.
I mean, so, our plan was that we would record it after full time, but United,
but,
being as brilliant as they are,
yes,
even at 3-0, they didn't leave us comfortable. But
how exciting are Manchester United? Don't you guys love it? Like, don't you guys simply love this? It's so entertaining. Alex, what do you think?
I think your football club is rotten and it should be burned down. yeah, hello, I'm here. The reason I'm here today is because obviously Neil and Varun are over I was trying to figure the best way to phrase that, but you're both in countries that aren't particularly close. But you're not in the UK. I am. So my broadcast footage is ahead. So I'm going to be updating the Man United score and minimally contribute to this episode.
Very good. That's an important role, I suppose. Yeah, if you hear random shouts in between the episode, that's the reason for it. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Manchester United. We're here to talk about a club that's doing way better by all metrics, and that is Real Madrid. Real Madrid, obviously, this week just beat Manchester City on penalties in the Champions League quarterfinal to advance to semi-final yet again. They're clear at the top of La Liga. We're recording this before El Clasico, but really, regardless of where that result goes, they look pretty comfortable on their way to win the league title as well. And I mean, just generally, they have an incredibly talented squad with so many great youngsters, and look set to be adding perhaps the best player in the world this summer as well. So they're in a fantastic place, and they've got a fantastic coach as well, Carlo Ancelotti. There's been a lot of talk about him potentially leaving this year, maybe next year, but at least for now, he looks set to stay. And certainly he deserves a lot of credit for where they are right now, and especially the way they're playing. So obviously we're going to go on to talk about, you know, their tactics this season, and also discuss what to look forward to next season with Mbappe joining. But first, I think it's worth getting a bit of context. So let's start with a bit of context on Carlo Ancelotti, because he's had a very interesting career. And he's been in the job longer than I've been on this planet. So, Varun, help us out here.
I mean, it is a really weird one, because if you go way, way ahead in Carlo Ancelotti's career when he started off, he was an Arrigo Sacchi disciple. And he was actually pretty rigid, pretty structured, and very, very into, you know, tactics and roles and how players fit into it. And then over time, he's found how to embrace player traits, how to embrace player personalities, characters, bring them to life, you know, add their color to the tactic. And he's just gone to the other extreme completely. He's just embraced more and more of it. And now you have the current version. But in all of this, I mean, one thing I would say is that Ancelotti is tactically very underrated. And I think I say this for a few managers. I think Zidane also faced some of this. I mean, at a lower level, even Solskjaer faced this at United. These are the kind of managers who are pretty good at game management, pretty good at man management. And they're kind of flexible in their approach. Like club to club, they keep changing. And because of that, their tactical innovation, their tactical prowess, it doesn't really get noticed. I mean, you have 100 videos talking Pep Guardiola system, Jurgen Klopp system, even De Zerbi system. I mean, he's not even as successful as these managers. But if you just write De Zerbi, and you'll get his exact title, because it's very clear, very structured. I think Ancelotti doesn't get the due credit, because you don't have that exact same Ancelotti system that translates across clubs, right? And I think he's had a lot of tactical innovations across his career. I mean, my favorite one is the work he did with AC Milan, to look at that Milan team and immediately understand that he had 4 or 5 midfielders who are really good at what they do. And they all are good in different ways, you know, and to make the Christmas tree formation, you know, the 4-3-2-1 narrow formation, and get the best out of all of them. And, you know, go to the Champions League multiple times deep. And it was like a brilliant team. And I think that's his peak work. But I think all across, he's done really good work across the top clubs. And to be very honest, this kind of approach, this kind of player-centric approach, it has its cons. And we saw that at Everton. There, you know, at a smaller club, you probably need a lot more of that structure, a lot more of that philosophy, a lot more of do this, then do that, then this will happen. You know, like how De Zerbi raises the ceilings of the floors of his teams. And that's something such an approach probably cannot do, which is why at Everton, it looked really bad. This whole relying on player traits, relying on player strengths kind of approach doesn't really work that much when there aren't that many player traits or player strengths, right? You know, it can't work with a relegation battling team or a bottom half team. And I thought Ancelotti looked really bad for that reason. A lot of people assumed he's just lost it, or, you know, he's in the decline, his age, and those were the reasons. And to be very honest, I was one of them. I thought Ancelotti was finished. I thought Real Madrid were just hiring him for that 1 year, you know, stopgap job until they get their real target, until they get a Nagelsmann or they get, you know, some other high-flying coach. And boy, I was wrong. And he's proven that at Real Madrid in this recent stint. And I think he's been tactically very innovative. And this season is a very good example. I mean, a lot of people just saw the Real Madrid match and they went like it's just a defensive, you know, job in which they were lucky. And again, Ancelotti is not getting tactical credit. And probably that was not even their best match, to be very honest. But over the season, he's done a lot of nice tactical innovations, really small, small things here and there. And I think there's another season where that is going under the radar a bit. There's a reason Madrid have done so well in the league. And like always, like his whole career, I think Carlo is not getting enough credit.
Yep, and of course, that's what we'll be digging into in this episode. But I think it's also worth getting a very quick bit of context on Real Madrid as well going into this season. Because obviously, there was a significant shift in the summer. Until last season, or even in the last couple of seasons, Karim Benzema was arguably their key player, especially with the way Ancelotti was sort of setting them up and making the play. And he left for Al Ittihad in Saudi Arabia. And their only real sort of big signing was Jude Bellingham, on whom they spent over 100 million euros from Borussia Dortmund. But in terms of replacing Benzema, what everyone expected obviously was another striker. And the only person who came in that position was Joselu from Espanyol. And I mean, with all due respect to him, he's obviously not a Benzema level striker. So everyone was really interested to see where they would go in terms of how they set up this season without Benzema, with Bellingham, without a top class number nine. And certainly I didn't expect it. I don't think many people expected it just based on the transfer window alone, is the fact that they actually switched to a false nine sort of system with Jude Bellingham in that role. And I think when we started recording this podcast way back when, before the start of the season, Varun was the first person who was watching those preseason friendlies where Bellingham started playing that role. So Varun, how have you seen him develop in that role? And did you see that coming when he moved to Real Madrid?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a lot of fun watching Jude Bellingham when he was at Dortmund. I likened his role, his best role, or where he's, you know, most useful to someone like a Paul Pogba. You do not play this player in a pivot. You do not give them first phase responsibility. Even second phase, yes, you can give them, but, you know, minimal, but you give them a lot of, you know, final third freedom. That's probably the player you want as your left side attacking eight in a midfield three, or a narrow left winger, basically someone who's attacking the left half space, and it could even be the right half space, but someone that attacking or that creative. At Dortmund, he played on the left wing a few times, and I thought it suited him a lot, similar to how Pogba played left wing at the end of his United career. So when Madrid did sign him, I was a little confused. I didn't know how it was going to work. But then the moment I saw the preseason games and the opening games, I was like, this makes total sense. This makes total sense. Give him that freedom in the final third. Give him that number 10 role, that attacking shadow striker kind of role. I mean, I don't know if it's a false nine role, because a false nine would be a striker who's dropping deep. This felt more like a midfielder who's advancing making those runs, making those channel runs like a striker. So midfield behaving like a striker. So probably more like a support striker or a shadow striker, you know, something like that. And I thought it worked really well. It suits Bellingham a lot. I think one of his very underrated qualities, which people are realizing this year, is his off-the-ball movement. He has incredible movement. And we haven't just seen it with Madrid. We've also seen it with England. In the last few England friendlies as well this year, he's been playing like a free number 10 role. And he makes such really good channel runs, which the likes of Harry Kane, Rashford, Foden, Saka, they all keep finding him with those through balls and those in between the lines kind of passes. So I think his off-ball movement is really good. He's one of those very, very dangerous players who keeps making those really nice ones between players, has a nice sense of the gaps. I think that's one of his underrated traits. Obviously, his dribbling is superb. And I think his best trait is his IQ. This is the guy who knows where to be when, right? And that's why I think a free role works. A free role doesn't work for everyone, but I think a free role works for him. Now, recently, people have been saying, oh, he's dropped off, the goals have dried off. Yes, that is true, because he's playing a little deeper. And I think this kind of shift also suits him. I think he's been pretty good in a slightly deeper left-sided midfield role where he has more second-phase responsibility. He's been picking it up from the back four or the defensive midfield a bit more and carrying. And I think he does that well too. And I think this is one caveat about Bellingham we need to understand going forward. This is my guess. He'll probably never be a clear one position, does one thing really well kind of player. He's always going to be that guy. You have to have a bit of a flexible role for him. He will play multiple roles in a season. Sometimes he'll play in a pivot. Sometimes he'll be a winger. Sometimes he'll play behind the striker. Sometimes he'll play when there's no striker and he's the most central attacking threat. And he'll probably give you 8 on 10 in all of them. And all his traits will also look 8 on 10. Because even after all this, I wouldn't say Bellingham is a 10 on 10 playmaker or a 10 on 10 goal threat or a 10 on 10 dribbler. So I think he's always going to be that player, you know, who will add a lot of value across a season in multiple positions, in multiple phases of play. But he'll probably never be known as that one thing, you know, like a Ozil level playmaker or a Kevin De Bruyne level visionary passer. He won't be known as one thing. He'll just be that, does everything to almost elite level kind of player.
Yeah, and I mean, that is exceptional. Of course, he is, what, only about 20, 21 years old. So still, as you say, there's lots of ways he could go and lots of things he could do. But like you say, this season, he's been fantastic. But if we zoom out a bit and look at the team as a whole, Real Madrid this season have also been really interesting in terms of, So what you mentioned, Varun, with Ancelotti leaning very heavily on player traits, what that's translated to due to, you know, the makeup of the Real Madrid squad is a very different wing dynamics, again, especially in possession, which is what we're focusing on first, because they're extremely left heavy. Obviously, there's star player before, or aside Bellingham, Vinicius Jr., firmly a left winger. Rodrigo, even if you start central, he's someone who drifts to the left. So their attack is, especially like up top, their attack is extremely left focused. I think that's led to a very interesting dynamic. Whereas on the right wing, you've got more of these runners like Fede Valverde or Dani Carvajal, who's just running up and down the wing, but obviously not great on the ball threats as those guys. So Alex, what have you made of this sort of very different wing dynamics? Because, I mean, generally what we tend to think of with teams in terms of how they approach their attacking play is that you want to have an equal threat across both wings to sort of keep the opposition defense guessing.
Yeah, I think you have the best of both sides of Real Madrid showcased on each wing. So on the right wing, as you kind of said, you've got a bit more of a mechanical setup. This is just from the games I've watched, really, where Lucas Vasquez played a lot more as a right back, and then Valverde as the sort of right central midfielder, and you have Modric sometimes a bit deeper as well. And like the way Madrid play down the right is like you often see him bounce these really nice right rotations or third man combinations with Vasquez pushing really high, which leaves Valverde to kind of come into the half space. Then you've got Modric kind of forming up just behind them to like make a nice little triangle. And the objective down the right is like quite consistently get to Vasquez on the edge of the block and like put in a low cross. and or like try and put in an early cross, right? And it's very different to the left foot. Ooh! Varane, I can happily tell you, my friend, if you keep looking at your TV, Amad Diallo had one FA Cup goal before this game, and he still got one FA Cup goal. Nothing's happened. Anyway, continuing on.
I knew this was coming. I got notifications.
Moving on to the Real Madrid left wing now. As I said, it was varied before. I was rudely interrupted by nothing. The left wing is very different to the right wing because, and this kind of shows the more relationist principle of Real Madrid, where you've got Vinicius. Basically, the objective on the left is isolate Vinicius as much as possible, try and take a defender away from him using Jude Bellingham to make runs. And sometimes you get Fernand Mendy there as well. But I think he's what you'll quite often see is like, rather than the right back being very advanced on one side, the left back, Mendy will sometimes just try and hold his position, just to make sure that he doesn't overcrowd Vinicius. This is something that Shakhtar did really well with Mudryk, I think, which maybe Chelsea haven't quite figured out yet at times, where sometimes Aurier doesn't need so much support because I can crowd his options. You know, if a left wing is on the overlap, then you know if he's going to try and dribble, he's going to go on the inside. So Real Madrid on the left always just try and leave Vinicius alone, I have found. That's how you can kind of see both wings showcase both sides of what Real Madrid do really well.
Yeah, and I think another point worth touching on, which is maybe again not sort of seen or discussed so much in terms of Real Madrid's tactics this season, is that they do also sort of vary or balance the degree of sort of this freedom that these players are given. Obviously, in terms of like individual players, like for example, a Bellingham or a Vinicius gets a lot more freedom than a centre back. The centre backs obviously expected to hold their positions, but also between like match situations, game states, that type of thing. Because I have seen in many cases, in certain matches or certain match situations, you do find actually that Real Madrid are not so like free flowing, fluid, relationist, off the cuff, whatever you want to call them. They are more sort of rigid, more positional in certain contexts, where maybe they want to retain the ball better, maybe they're 2-0 up, they just want to see how to win. And so that's that's something which they don't get enough credit for. Like Warren says, the Ancelotti is not given enough credit for his tactical nous. But obviously those are decisions that he and his coaching staff are probably making and passing on to the players. So I think that's also something worth watching out for. But yeah, I mean, on the whole, Real Madrid on the ball are exceptional, exceptional team and thoroughly entertaining to watch as well. So I think we can quickly move on as well now to the defensive side of things, because this is, I mean, if you had to pick out a tactical weakness, this is where it clearly lies. We did touch upon it, I think, in the Champions League predictions episode we did, but Real Madrid's press this season has had issues. They're often leaving big gaps. Let's say the front four are pressing, then there's big gaps between them and the rest of the side. I think we saw that in that game against Manchester City as well, which they won with a defensive performance. But crucially, it was a defensive performance based on a block, which is what I said in that Champions League preview episode as well, is that if Real Madrid do win these games, they will have to defend well in a block and not press, because their press has clear weaknesses. And I think it's always interesting to consider where that comes from, because it can sometimes come from the way the press is like coached or set up, or sometimes it can also come from players who are not that intelligent out of possession, not the best pressers in the world. And I think in Real Madrid's case, obviously it's a bit of both always, but it's more the first option, because they do have some exceptionally intelligent players up there. So if they take a 4-2-3-1 shape out of possession, for example, then you've got Bellingham as the number 10, who, like Varun said, his game intelligence is, I can't speak enough about it. But Fede Valverde, one of the best hard workers defensively. And maybe on the left wing, you might have some weakness from Vinicius. But then again, with Vinicius, you also want him to, as we say, cheat, which is like stay high to pose a counter-attacking threat, because they do have an exceptional counter-attacking threat, again, with Vinicius is sort of carrying and on the ball quality, and then these runners around him, Bellingham, Valverde, whoever else is there. So when they go back, when they drop into block, not only do they have, I mean, they can, you know, defend solidly, but they also have this constant counterattacking threat, which is a problem for opponents. But I do think it would be helpful if they could also press really. I mean, it just adds another dimension. I don't know what you guys think, but clearly you guys do think, because both of you have your hands up, and I don't know who is first. So
Varun was first.
Yeah, well, Varun, go ahead.
Yeah,
then.
I mean, I think by the end, you were starting to come towards what is my feeling as well. I think the high press is something which is a bit more of a coaching issue. I mean, all said and done, we gave Ancelotti a lot of credit and he has kept up with so many things. But I think the way pressing structures have evolved today, right? I mean, you look at some of the modern coaches and how important, especially the high presses, a defensive block is still something that's been going around for a while, right? How to coach an organized block is still, you know, like, that's like time immemorial. But the pressing structures are where your modern coaches have just gone to another level. You know, I mean, we are picking out very, very specific things like hybrid presses and how lanes are closed and how turnovers are created. And some of the best in the business like Arteta, Guardiola and all are pretty good at this. And I think this is where Ancelotti's high press does look a little naive. There is a bit of the players can handle it syndrome, which is carrying forward. And I think that works better in possession, that works better in a defensive block. But a high press is where if you're not that structured and if you are relying a bit on the players to press their way out of a situation or, you know, press or counter press and win their duel and just manage it or cover that space quickly and manage it, it just doesn't work. And as you said, Bellingham, Valverde, I mean, even the midfielders, Kamavinga, Tchouameni, I mean, these are good. They're very good for a press. I mean, if a manager had these assets, you can see the ground coverage, the intensity, the athleticism that is available there. So I think a lot of them is management issues. I see any good build-up with just strings a few passes and they're bypassing Real Madrid players all over the place. Their positioning, the way they structure their press, who goes wide, who goes narrow, these things are very, very off. So I think the press, especially, I would blame that lack of that just elite tier coaching, you know, structure.
I guess I'm kind of similar in your camp, Varun. I think if I was trying to classify this press based off my notes, I've not done so in my notes, but just reading back on it and like my feelings, I think I'd call it an option-oriented press. And the reason I say that is I think it is largely like based off that what the players want. So a consistent note I've got in, I have is Jude Bellingham will often, I guess, lead the press and then he'll turn around and realise like most of his teammates aren't following him and he'll be like complaining about them, like why is the midfielder not jumped to cover the pivot when he's jumped to cover the centre back. And like you mentioned, Valverde's also a very good presser as well. I think it's like, If I was to classify it, I think kind of something what Varun was saying feels very player driven. So I guess you could say like option oriented. The players are deciding what's best to do. It's just you've got a complete mix of players there. Like you've got Kroos and Modric who are not going to be high pressers unless it's the Champions League game, right? Same with Vinicius as well. And then you've got the complete other end of the scale with Valverde and Bellingham who are complete workhorses, right? So I think that's where we see like the issues come with the press.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. The sort of player-driven bit. I mean, like Varun said at the start, Ancelotti's tactics are very player-driven. And in possession, we didn't really touch on this, but you know, the fact that they have the likes of Kroos, Modric, Tchouameni, Kamavinga in midfield means that they have this base which can dictate play, dictate tempo, dictate so many things. And you can rely on them to make the right decisions at all the right times. And that works in possession because, in effect, by having the ball, you already have some degree of control and some degree of proactivity. But out of possession, you have to be a lot more coordinated because, like, in possession, let's say Kroos has the ball and, you know, Vinicius makes a run, but he's not looking for him and he plays a pass somewhere else. It's fine. You still have the ball. You're still retaining possession. But out of possession, if Bellingham makes a run and, you know, Kroos doesn't jump, then the opposition have a pass to play through and, you know, they've broken the press. So it's much more important to be much more coordinated and to have that coordination, to have a greater degree of sort of pre-planning with your pressing. So I think that's where this, you know, very player driven approach, maybe lets Ancelotti down a bit. And like you guys said, they need to sort of work a few things out there. But I mean, obviously, on the whole, it's not that big of an issue just because of how good they are on the ball and also how much of a counter-attacking threat they can pose in a deeper block. So I think that's enough for Real Madrid this season, unless you guys have anything to add. But if not, let's go on to the real interesting part, which by the looks of our doc and notes, looks set to spark a very interesting debate. Because our next question is, how can you add Mbappe to the mix? Alex's answer is no. Varun's answer is, of course, yes. Who wants to make their case first?
I'm above Varun in the dock.
And you're above him in the dock. But yes, why would you not add the best player in the world to certainly one of the best teams in the world?
Quite simply, I just don't see how it works with him and Vinicius Jr. And I will caveat that. I am Alex Barker, you know. Just because I don't see it doesn't mean that Carlo Ancelotti doesn't see it.
I
thought you were going to
say, I am Alex Barker and I don't like good things.
Baron, be careful, otherwise I swear I will fake another goal. Right.
I thought you were going to say, I am Alex Barker like I am Jose Mourinho.
No, I am Alex Barker. I am not Carlo Ancelotti. So, and he is the master, right, of tactical flexibility. If there's any man who's going to get Vinicius and Mbappe in the same team and making it work and not suffering trade-offs across the pitch, I know Rodrigo or Bellingham or whoever, it's Carlo Ancelotti. What I fear is, without Carlo Ancelotti, let's be honest, is he going to stay more than another year? I don't think so. You bring in, you know, a Nagelsmann or maybe more of a positional coach. But I just think the number of managers who get both of them working together is very, very small. And the problem I see, like, if it's not really clear, is that even Mbappe this season, playing, quote, up front for PSG, he always likes to drift to the left-hand side. And he has improved playing with his back to goal this season. But even then, like, he's maybe an average or above average striker. He's the best in the world winger. And, like, I guess this season he's kind of played between both and he's improving on his, like, striker tendencies. He's not going to want to play like as the number nine and let Vinicius be the one running in behind. They just feel too similar players to me. I just can't see it working. And I don't think there's many managers who will get it working either. Your turn, Van.
You have to... No, hold on. Well, I'm going to let you...
I'm not joking. Coventry have just scored.
No way.
In the 120th minute.
Yeah, you're joking.
I'm genuinely not joking there, celebrate. I don't know who it is. In the 120th minute, 30 seconds of extra time with 1 minute added on, Coventry have just made it 4-3.
I still know that.
Wait.
I'm genuinely not joking. I'm the boy who cried wolf. Oh my, everyone's going mental.
No way, he's right. What? No,
wait. My ball's on the left wing in my
watch
sleeve.
Watch this. It's gonna be the bottom left-hand corner in a minute, mate.
Yeah. I mean, it's like in the top left half right now. Wait.
Enjoy this playing out live, guys.
That is a nice through ball.
Possibly the end of...
Oh, they're in the box. Oh, yeah. That was easy. That was easy for Coventry. That is nice. Torp, good guy, Torp. Good guy. Nice one.
Well, in fairness, mate, at least someone was marking him.
Yeah. Okay, wait. Then give me a minute. I have to tweet about this. What is the nastiest tweet I can tweet right now?
This is getting
exclusive insight into the inner workings of how Varun runs the devil's team.
You've just got a tweet. You just tweet, disappointed, not surprised.
No, this is too nice. That's too nice.
Oh, is it offside?
Nah.
It may well be offside.
Surely not, man. Looking at the replay. I mean, I'm behind, but I mean, based on this replay.
Oh.
Nah. This club, man. If they survive from here.
Baron's hovering over the send button.
Yeah, I know. I've like written stuff and I'm waiting.
It'll be so Man United. I think it's been ruled out.
Nah.
It's been ruled out. There you go. Yeah, offside. So, Kylian Mbappe, bro, you think he works at Real Madrid?
Yeah, okay. Let's get back on track.
Yeah, no, hold on, quickly. What I was going to say is...
I'm going to say it first.
I was going to say something before you said something.
I'm going to say something before you say something.
Okay, wow, okay. No, because I was going to ask Alex for a bit of clarification.
Okay.
Go on, then go on.
Yeah, so just quickly, Alex, before Varun has his rebuttal, I'm sure. Do you quickly want to explain why exactly you think Vinicius and Mbappe don't work on the left wing? Because obviously Vinicius is like a wide winger. He can work on the rush line, and Mbappe, you know, works in the half space or at least inside. So why do you think
Okay, even if we take that, like, let's say Mbappe's going to stick to the half space, which I personally don't think he does. Like, that's still going to the striker space completely vacated. And I think it's just going to be very lopsided. And, like, I think there's a difference between what Real Madrid do now, where obviously their most dangerous player is off the left. And I just think it makes him far too lopsided on the left-hand side, is what I'm saying. And I would fight the argument that, like, that Mbappe's just going to stick to the half space, because I think he's, like, even for PSG, you'll see Barcola having to come inside quite often because Mbappe's just go all the way out to the left, like, to the touchline.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'll come in here, and Neil kind of half stole my point, which is why I wanted to go before him. But anyways, yeah, I mean, my rebuttal to that is what Neil said. I think they're different enough. And I think you only have to look at how Vinicius played with Benzema. I mean, there was this, I think the year Benzema left, I mean, the year before that, if you go to Who Scored and you see their heat maps, you cannot tell the difference between Vinicius and Benzema's heat map. They have a lot of red in the left half space, left wing, and a bit in the striker area. And they constantly would keep swapping positions. And both of them were like, you know, covering those three zones, depending on the phase, depending on the game state, depending on the opponents. And it just worked. It worked really well. And it was as ridiculous then as it's probably going to be. I mean, even then it made no sense. I mean, it was so left-leaning. And there were two players, there two furthest attackers who are both, you know, switching positions on the left side. So I think Mbappe is going to work exactly like that. And like Neil said, I think Vinicius is a little better wide. He can do wide receptions. He can receive on the wing and he can take on his man. I don't think that's where you want Mbappe. Yes, he obviously can also take on his man. He's a really good dribbler. But as you yourself were saying, Alex, he has been improving a little bit on the left half space or central tendencies on his receptions. I'm not saying he's a Zlatan level back to goal striker or a target man, you know, like Dovbyk or Zlatan or Giroud or something like that. But I just think he has enough close control, passing sense, movement to keep switching with Vinicius and make it work. And I'm actually going to go one step ahead. We already have a few indications on how he's used at PSG. If a midfielder can drift to the left and cover for him, and when Mbappe goes in, then it can probably work. So your main argument is, how can two left-leaning attackers...
I'd like to jump in here, because I think I'd like to clarify a point.
So I'll just finish my
point. I'd like to clarify one point I'd like to clarify. It's not that I don't think... Like, the point I'd clarify, I think Mbappe doesn't want to play down the middle. I think if Mbappe wants to play on the left wing, and if he's signing for Real Madrid, he wants to play on the left wing. I don't think he wants to play down the middle at all. That is my strongest point about this.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't think he wants to do anything what Benzema did.
Score goals.
But it obviously was the score goals. I don't think he was doing anywhere near the middle. I think it's been a compromise this season. I think that was partly induced by the fact he threw his toys out of the pram in the summer, and don't forget he was expelled from the starting 11 for a bit. I think Kylian Mbappe, if it's up to him, he wants to be on the left wing because he wants to be on the touchline. I think he has been improving centrally. But if it's up to him, he plays on the left wing.
I mean, so I can't vouch for knowing what Mbappe's true thoughts are or you know, what he thinks. And
terrible analysis.
And partly I agree with Alex in that he probably doesn't want to be like a proper central striker you know, battling center backs in the box, receiving crosses. That's probably what irritates him. So, I mean, I think we have to look beyond just the position. He doesn't want to do certain things on the pitch, right? That's what I'm getting from this. He doesn't want to stand in the box, be uninvolved in play, not receive the ball, not use his carrying, his dribbling. And he doesn't want to be receiving long balls and crosses inside the box. That is a waste of
his time. I say it's a step further. I think he's actually gone on to say he doesn't want to play if he's back to goal. When he's complained in public about being a pivot. So I don't even think it's about being in the box. I think he doesn't want to be, like, even against a mid-block, right? He doesn't want to be in a central space facing away from goal. I think that's when I've seen him, like, post after a game and complain.
And I probably think he doesn't have to do it. I mean, so yeah, that's what I was getting at. If you think beyond just formations, and even if Mbappe is vacating the center 90% of the game and he's dropping to the left half space for receiving and Vinicius is wide or Vinicius goes in sometimes, there's always someone like a Jude Bellingham who can attack the box from deep as well. And there's always someone like a Kamavinga who can protect the left side defensively other than the left back as well. So there are enough people to occupy zones in a very relationist way. It won't work like a proper 4-3-3 and a positional structure. And I think this is where Real Madrid have to think about their next coach. They can't be getting a JDB 4-3-3 if they're also going to get Mbappe. And that's where I kind of agree with you. This works in a very, very fluid setup where zone occupation and runs and defending for each other and running for each other all happens in a very, very relationist way. So I can see it happening, but I can also understand the amount of mental maths that is going to go into it for it to happen successfully.
I think isolated, it might work. But like in terms of what you're saying, about if you have like Jude Bellingham filling that zone and Kamavinga covering over, but like consider the rest of the team, the fact that they're also signing Alphonso Davies, that's going to make him even more left side reliant. He's not going to be sitting back. There's only so many attacking players they can field, right? If they're fielding, let's say, a front three of Bellingham, Mbappe, Vinicius, and then they're fielding Davies as well, they're going to have no right side presence whatsoever because the right back's not going to be able to go forward. Or, like, at least he's going to be actually fairly limited.
They have no right side presence anyway.
But they do, that's the thing. It's functional. They do have a right side presence to an extent. Like, I think this is a player with no right side presence. And I think that's fine for, like, a common La Liga game. I think in Champions League games, one of Vinicius, Bellingham, or Mbappe ends up, like, there's a conversation about them missing out. Or, like, Alphonso Davies as well. Like, signing Mbappe means one of the superstars they have is going to end up getting benched in the big games. And it's just, like, for morale, it's just going to upset things.
So I'll say two things. One is that probably is fine. I think the way Madrid are building their team, someone is going to get benched. I mean, you're right. I mean, and Rodrigo was benched a lot as well. So he came in with a lot of hype. And now they have Endrick too. They have a ridiculous team. Surely some people are going to get benched. And I think Real Madrid know this. This is definitely their version of Galacticos. Secondly, I'm just going to leave one last thought and then we can move on to the next topic.
What about me, man?
Then Neil can have his last say and close this. I'm going to refer to a team. You guys will not like the reference, but I'm going to bring it. What I want you to think of, Solskjaer United.
I knew it.
Yeah, he had Luke Shaw on the overlap.
It's just the same United who missed their first penalty.
Yes, it's the same United. It's Casemiro. Come on, man. It's Casemiro.
Ex-Real Madrid too. That's beautiful.
Yeah. We should have just done a live commentary through episode. You know, we should do that once. Maybe the Champions League final. Anyways, what was I saying? Yeah. So, I mean, just think back on Solskjaer's United. Luke Shaw was an overlapping fullback. Rashford was a winger who was on the touchline, but would come in at times. Martial was a proper left-half space player. Also, former left winger, barely played striker, never made runs, never did any of the striker stuff. He was literally on the left half space. And then Daniel James and Van Bissaka just, you know, they were there for defending largely. And it was a very, very left tilted. And then Bruno, there was a number 10. So think of Bellingham in the Bruno role, Vinicius in the Rashford role, Mbappe in the Martial role, Davies in the Luke Shaw role, and then Valverde in the Daniel James role, and Wan-Bissaka, Kawayal maybe. And all of them are then are twice better than all the United players I just named. So there's a whole, it can work. I mean, if someone like Solskjaer can pull it off, obviously other managers can pull it off. It'll be very left-leaning. But as long as there are enough balances and enough, things keeping it on track, I probably think it can work. So that was my last argument on it, and I'm done.
Yeah, I think I'm somewhere between you guys, but leaning towards Varun. So I do take Alex's points about Mbappe not wanting to do certain things, but also I think, okay, so for one, I still, again, this is going to be a very, if this does play out on the pitch, it's going to be very fluid. We can't really think of players in terms of like Mbappe just half space, because he's going to move around a lot, Vinicius is going to move around a lot. But if I had to say something like average position, Mbappe is not a guy who's going to hug the touchline, right? He is going to play inside. In fact, with PSG earlier on in the season, what we had is Mbappe inside with Vitinha or a midfielder going to provide with, because they didn't have a fit left back who could overlap. But the point is that Mbappe is never your widest left winger. Vinicius can play that role, and he does. There's a lot of strengths in his game that are suited to that role. So I think just thinking about it that way, we see it work on the left. But also, I take what Alex says, because when I think about how this might play out, I do think it would be really cool if Mbappe was happy to play closer to a Benzema role that you mentioned, Varun. And in fact, I was having this exchange on Twitter with Mohammed on the back of the video Alex did on Mbappe, which is the fact that Mbappe's off-ball movement still is, I guess, the only part of his game which isn't absolutely terrorizing defenses. And if he's not going to change that in his sort of high left role, then he to develop as a player, obviously he's pretty damn good right now, but if he still wants to develop, his best route probably then is to play back to goal in a central space. Now that's all of my serious analysis based on sort of information we have. A bit of psychoanalysis, pseudo-psychoanalysis. I think, now again, we're talking about this as if Real Madrid have already signed Mbappe. It's not official, but like it's next to almost official. Now, I think if they are signing Mbappe, I am pretty sure Real Madrid, obviously Mbappe has his sort of set of demands and stuff. I am equally sure Real Madrid have their set of demands to bring him. Because at PSG, he's basically been allowed to sort of do whatever and ask for whatever. And they've had to sort of give in. But Real Madrid don't need to do that, because clearly this season, without him, they are more than fine. So I'm pretty sure that they expect him to play at least a somewhat central role, because you can't remove Vinicius from this team, right? So I'm sure that, again, he doesn't have to play exactly like Benzema back to goal. But I'm pretty sure that if they are signing him, then they know that he's okay to at least play on paper in a striker position for them. Now, obviously, he drifts around and everything, but that's where he starts. If he does that, I think there's no problem. Now, to the point about the next manager, like Varun said, Real Madrid have to think about this specific dynamic a lot in terms of who they're hiring and what sort of style they're playing. But also, I think even Alex conceded that Ancelotti will find a way, right? I mean, we've seen that with him consistently, especially in these sort of contexts. And I think if Ancelotti provides a blueprint, whoever succeeds him will be smart enough to not mess with that if it's working. And I'm sure in a year, Ancelotti will find something that works. So then whoever it is, because it's not going to be a Pep Guardiola-like guy, right? Even if it's a Julian Nagelsmann. Nagelsmann is someone who, again, does sort of lean into player traits quite heavily when he sets up his team, albeit in a very different way. He still respects that. And so in that respect, I think whoever succeeds Ancelotti will know not to mess with this, at least. So I think even in the long term, this does work. But what I will say, and this takes us nicely to our next point, is that I agree with Alex's concerns about them not having a lot of left-sided presence. And this is where transfers are really important for them this summer. Because, they're probably adding a left-back in Alphonso Davies, which is important because Ferland Mendy has not been great, especially in big games. On the right, they're getting Endrick, who is a more right-leaning forward. So obviously he's very young. He'll need time, but he's someone who can provide something there. But I think they also do need to sign a right back because Dani Carvajal is not getting younger. Lucas Vazquez is decent, but ideally, maybe sort of contrary to what Alex said there, I think they should actually get a right back who can pose a serious attacking threat. Because I do get that when you've got Mbappe, Vinicius, and Davies on the left, you've got an extreme amount of sort of left-heavy focus. But I don't think the way to deal with that is to have like a right back who sort of inverts or tucks in. I actually think you push your right back up as well. And you leave your centre-backs and midfielders to deal with the rest defence side of things. But I think they should go for an attacking right back. And obviously, they will have their options.
But then if they do that, then who's going to fill the central spaces that we spoke about? Because if you're making your right back really attacking, you've just said you're making your midfielders the guys who are going to help out in rest defence, then who's going to be the guys to fill all the central space that your Karl Marx team is leaving in the middle?
I think what you're doing here is you're taking away maybe let's say Valverde right now is providing a lot of attacking threat on the right, or at least presence on the right. Maybe you take some of that away from him, having dropped back. Obviously, I mean, we're not sure how long maybe Modric is leaving this summer. Maybe Kroos is. But even Kamavinga, Tchouameni, all of these guys are more than capable of holding it down. And obviously, if Modric, Kroos leave, they will sign some extremely good midfielders as well. So I think they have enough quality, honestly. That's my basic point is they have enough quality to hold the center down that they can also afford to get a right back who pushes up. And with that, I think you get some of that. I mean, it's not nearly balanced, but I think you get something on the right to counteract to some extent something on the left. But Varun, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, my feeling is the complete opposite. I think you actually get a right back who tucks in or who inverts. Like, I'm thinking of a Benjamin Pavard type who's almost like a center back, because going by what I said, if they are adding Mbappe, or you know what, even if they're not adding Mbappe, because with Rodrigo and all the left-leaning attackers, they still have the same problem anyway. I think the only way it works is if it takes that 3-2-5 kind of shape with a right back tucking in, a left back being the widest person on the left, and then you have at least 3-4 central attackers, one midfielder going up, one winger coming in, the right winger coming in, maybe something like that. So I think for the balance of the whole system, a right back who aids rest defense centrally, either in the pivot or in the back line, and lets the left back bomb forward. That's the only way. And we must not forget, other than Davies, they also have Fran Garcia, who's also the exact same prototype. He is very good, overlapping, fast, good dribbling. I mean, I really liked him the few times I saw him. So if they are... My guess is what Real Madrid is doing, and the Carvajal conversion into a more defensive, well-rounded, he sometimes inverts, he sometimes joins the back line. My guess is they're going towards attacking left backs with Davies and Fran Garcia on the left, and another Carvajal type, a younger version of a Carvajal who is a bit more helpful in rest defense and progression from deep.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think that's fine as well, because I would also say, like, that's so what I said is like addressing Alex's concern about not having any right side presence. But I think what I also say is that when you have Mbappe and Vinicius on any side, anywhere on the pitch, you have a lot of attacking threat. And that's very hard to stop. I mean, you know, you can put 5 players there, but they're still going to find a way to, you know, do something magical. So I think even if you just fully zone in on just the, like, and have an extremely left-focused attack with these players, that's fine. So, yeah, I think there's a number of ways they could go. But one thing I think all of us would definitely agree on is that they do need a centre-back. We touched on this in our last episode when we were discussing Lenny Yoro. Obviously, we don't think he's the guy who should go there immediately. But it's quite clear that they need depth and maybe even starting quality in that position, because right now they have Rudiger. We did all forget Eder Militao in that last episode, but he's obviously been injured for a long time. But even if he returns, you know, to the quality where he was when he left, you still need, you know, a good sort of third choice option. And right now, it's, I mean, Nacho is there. Alaba hasn't really been that good. None of them are, let's say, none of them are at the level that the rest of the team is. So I think that's definitely one aspect for them to focus on. What do you guys think? Any other places or any other sort of roles?
Can I just give my center back shout?
Oh, yes. That's we should do that. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm continuing my same track of if we're going to have a right back tucking in. And I think Rudiger is a very good example of a left-sided centre-back who should have a bit more freedom on the left side, right? He would look at home in a back three where he's on the left. I think he's
carrying, like he was at Chelsea.
Exactly. I think his carrying, his progressing is very good. So if we are forming a back four where the left back is super attacking and the right back tucks in, then in possession it becomes a back three where Rudiger is one super aggressive left center back, the right back is one nice progressive right center back, and then you need someone who's like a central center back. And I think this is the profile Madrid should go for. I don't think Alaba is getting any better. I don't think Nacho is getting any better. Militao, we all forgot him in the last episode. Yes, he should also be an option for the central center back or the right center back role. He's also that half right back hybrid kind of, he can play a right back who tucks in, so he's a nice option for the wide right side guy. So I think they badly need a central center back guy, and I think the person who can play that role, the young wonder kid whom they should invest in, is Antonio Silva of Benfica, and I rate him well. I scored him very highly when I was researching him, and the only gaps he had, I felt, were defending in the wide areas. He's not super agile. He's not, you don't want him wide one-on-one in the channels versus a good winger. He does struggle a bit there. We have seen that this year. But if that is avoided as a central center back who can distribute from the back, who can cover, who has who can defend a bit more vertically, he knows when to step out and when to step back. So if you limit him to that kind of role, I think he's excellent. Very good progression from the back. Nice tall guy, decent aerially. Just avoid channel defending, which will be avoided in the system that I'm proposing. I think he could be a very good fit for them. And Benfica have a 120 million release clause, but they rarely stick to the whole 120 million. Like Gonzalo Ramos went for 70. So I think you could probably get him for something like 80. And I think that would be a decent investment for Real Madrid.
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic shot, actually, because, I mean, like you say, he's a really good player, really exciting, really young. And I think the reason we sort of, I mean, the place we distinguish him from Yoro, who's obviously another very exciting young center back, is the fact that, one, he's played more, I mean, he's more established at the senior level. It's what, I think almost two full seasons for him now, maybe even like three, this third. But certainly he's been around for more time. And so, two, I mean, the league quality is a separate question, but like, on club quality wise, you have to say Benfica is a step above Lille. And really, from Benfica, you're looking at the next step. You're looking at an elite club. Like from Lille, you can still go to a very high stepping stone, like Osimhen to Napoli. But from Benfica, I mean, there's nowhere else to go. You're going to Barcelona like Joao Felix. You're going to PSG like Gonzalo Ramos. So I think if Real Madrid want to have Antonio Silva at any point, then this is the point where they have to step in and sign him. So yeah, I think that's probably the best shout I can think of as well, actually. So yeah, I think that's all we've got, unless Alex has any further thoughts, which he does.
No, I don't think so. I was just answering to say no. I think they've signed so many players. I think reinforced centre back and right back, but yeah, that's leave the attack alone. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if Modric leaves, do you get an extra midfielder or?
Nah.
I think, do you have enough? Let's look at this.
I mean, my controversial opinion is Haaland probably suits Real Madrid better than Mbappe, but you know.
That's another episode there. We don't have time for that. Mm-hmm. Haaland.
Oh,
City guy.
Yeah, I mean,
scored a few goals himself.
I get what Alex is saying. I get it.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite clearly though that doesn't look likely to happen this summer at least. So maybe we save that for another day. But yeah, I guess that's all for this episode. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed it. We certainly did. You can find all of us on Twitter. I'm at Shailat Neel. Varun is ranting about Manchester United at The Devil's DNA. And Alex is at Euroexpert_. If you also go to the @GetFootballEU account, you will find in the link, or sorry, in the bio, the links and handles of all our country and league specific accounts, which you can follow to be updated with all the big news around the world and especially in Europe as we approach the end of the season and the run in the title races and obviously Champions League. So keep an eye on that. You can find links to that in your episode notes or description, depending on where you're listening. You can also, if your app allows it, we'd appreciate it if you rated the podcast and gave us a 5-star review if you enjoyed it. And of course, we'd appreciate any shares on social media and with your friends as well. But thank you very much for listening. Thanks to you too. I hope you'll be back next week when Manchester United are not scamming undeserved wins, because, I mean, they can't keep getting away with this.